The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
There we go. All together, we're actually we the people. Separately, we're nowhere.
But together.
We're just faces in a crowd.
Separately, we're I the person.
Nice. Just in case we ever break up the band, you know, and we got to go our separate ways.
Yeah. We don't have to be we.
Oh, my gosh. So everything is situated today for the people who listened last week. We had that scurry at the beginning and, you know, all those failed phone call attempts. Today is going off without a hitch. Can believe it or not, it's daylight savings time. That usually throws us a curveball.
No, it's no longer daylight savings time.
Well, that's true. It's the stupid hour change. Yeah, we'll just call it the stupid hour change.
Yeah, we've been caught on that before, haven't we?
We've been busted on that. Oh. We do poorly in the spring.
Where is everybody?
We seem to navigate fall well, but spring we kind of stink at. So this afternoon we have with us Christine Harbin Hansen. She's the Deputy Director of Federal Affairs for the Americans for Prosperity. And so you've been hearing all this stuff about the XM Bank. And, you know, people just don't know a lot about it. So today they're talking about the efforts in Congress, which actually worked. This is a little bit after the fact. This is from Christine, to revive the corrupt Export-Import Bank. The bank, which provided American taxpayer-backed loans and loan guarantees to foreign companies, had a history of questionable deals and conduct and was recently allowed to expire when up for legal authorization. And I'm not going to read the whole rest of it because that's the stuff she's going to tell us about. But, Christine, I don't have a bio for you, so maybe you could tell us something about your real self.
Oh, sure. Well, first, thanks for having me on. It's great to be with you and Bill.
Thanks for making the time.
Oh, my pleasure. And I'm with Americans for Prosperity. We are the largest conservative grassroots organization. We have 38 chapters across the country, nearly 3 million activists, and I handle our federal affairs. So I'm based here in Washington, and I've been working very closely with people on Capitol Hill on this important issue.
Very good. And So the whole, give us a little snapshot of what the Export-Import Bank, if it was running well, how about this, what would it do?
Well, our position at
possible?
Americans for Prosperity is that there would be, this is such a level of government meddling in the marketplace.
Yeah.
If it were running well, in our opinion, it wouldn't exist. So.
Yeah, I realized after I said it, I'm like, that was probably the wrong question.
Best case scenario.
So for the people who would make, how about this? For the people who would make the case that we like it, what would be their take on it? Because the rest of the show, we're going to talk about why we don't like it.
Definitely. Well, what we hear from XM beneficiaries and supporters is that it's good for job creation, that it boosts exports, and it's very good for the manufacturing sector across the country. But these are a lot of politically charged talking points that don't really match up with reality. And so we've been spending a lot of our time and efforts at Americans for Prosperity in disputing these myths about the Export-Import Bank and calling on our partners on Capitol Hill to let it expire and also, almost more importantly, let it stay expired.
Exactly. You know, can you give people a little snapshot of what it does, what it actually does?
The Export-Import Bank has been around since 1934, so it's been around for a really long time, and until recently, very few people knew a lot about it. But what it does is it provides favorable rates to companies to buy American products. So it's intended to boost exports. And boosting exports does sound like it's a good idea. Of course, we want to have a thriving exporting economy and send our American-made goods abroad. However, the problem with the Export-Import Bank is that it uses Americans' tax dollars to do it, and it put American families and businesses on the hook if any of these loans go belly up.
So most people out there wouldn't deal with this at all. They would have no, they wouldn't even know any of this was going on behind the scenes.
Well, very few people know about the Export-Import Bank, but here's the thing. The more they learn about it, the more they hear it, the more they oppose it. And
true.
So we've been seeing at the grassroots level and also on Capitol Hill, an increasing opposition to extending the Export-Import Bank. However, unfortunately, beneficiaries and supporters of XM are well-connected in Washington, and so they're very effective in lobbying and people here to extend their handout. And that's one of the things that we're seeing right now with recent activities on the Export-Import Bank. Even though Congress let it expire in June, we saw the House pass a bill this past week that would resurrect the Export-Import Bank. And the Senate is poised to consider similar legislation. So even though the bank expired, the issue is still very active.
So does the Ex-Im Bank have anything to do with setting tariffs, or either directly or indirectly with setting tariffs on imports?
No, it doesn't do anything like that. What it is, it helps with financing instead of dealing with tariffs or other types of quotas or other international issues. What the Export-Import Bank does is it provides favorable lending rates to companies in order to that export their goods. So we see a lot of this in the manufacturing sector. A lot of big, well-connected companies are strong supporters of this.
But then
what I will
hurt, but it hurts our guys here, because I had heard I don't know if I read it or heard it. It was with Boeing. And if you were an overseas company and you wanted to buy a plane, you actually got a really good deal. But if you wanted to buy a plane here, you paid significantly more.
That's true. We see a lot of domestic companies that are directly hurt by it, by the activities of the Export-Import Bank. And so if you're a domestic airline company, you're not able to buy airplanes at the same favorable rate as some of their overseas competitors. So while we hear Export-Import Bank beneficiaries and supporters talk about how this is a great thing for job creation, the problem is that it overlooks all the harms that it imposes, not just on domestic companies who compete with these foreign companies, but it also is a problem for American taxpayers as well, because they're on the hook for these loans if there's a problem with them. So there are a lot of really harmful effects that happen on the overall economy, and those are some of the things that we've been trying to educate on in our activities on the issue over the past 2 years.
And do you have any idea how much money we're talking about in loans through the Ex-Im Bank?
The Ex-Im Bank does have a lending cap. There's well over $100 million. I don't have the full number in front of me, but I do know that it's losing money. A nonpartisan analysis from the Congressional Budget Office highlighted that since the bank doesn't accurately account for the risk associated with these loans, it's actually losing $2 billion over the next decade.
So they use
real money.
Yeah, so they use taxpayers' money, and they're not making a profit. Boy, that seems odd, doesn't it?
So I can hear people asking, okay, so why would American companies want to use taxpayer funds to sell things cheaper to overseas companies? Not just sell them cheaper overseas, but give those companies an advantage over American companies. Who's actually kind of architecting this behind the scenes?
Ex-Im beneficiaries are the ones who are really calling hard on Congress to extend this because they're directly benefiting from these favorable rates. Unfortunately, due to the fact of in economics we call this concentrated benefits diffuse costs, and what that means is that the people who are shouldering the burden don't have as strong of an incentive to lobby their members of Congress and their elected officials to let this, bad government program expire. And so that's one of the reasons that we've been really focused on this issue at Americans for Prosperity, because we represent the grassroots voice. And so we've been working closely with AFC activists in the field and really highlighting the problems associated with the Export-Import Bank, highlighting the fact of using this corporate welfare program to send our tax dollars abroad to many companies that are state-owned in countries that don't really like us very much. So we've been educating activists on the issues and connecting them to their elected officials on Capitol Hill to encourage them to let the Export-Import Bank stay expired.
So if we give tax money to foreign companies, I guess we give them money to produce products to sell back to the United States. Am I getting that right?
No. What we do is the Export-Import Bank uses the tax dollars to give favorable rates for companies abroad to buy our products.
Okay. So what is our ability to collect on those loans if they go bad, if it's a foreign country and they decide, oh, we can't pay it back, or is that just common, they never pay it back?
Well, unfortunately, in that situation, American taxpayers would be on the hook in order to come up with the difference. So there's a lot of really concerning things associated with it.
Is that happening?
We have seen in the past some in the 1980s, the Export-Import Bank sought a bailout from American taxpayers on the issue. We haven't seen very egregious examples of late, but what we have been seeing is a culture of corruption. We've seen a lot of Ex-Im Bank employees get in situations where they're soliciting bribes or kickbacks in order to extend these loans. The way I think about it is, you know, the Ex-Im Bank already picks winners and losers, and then among those winners and losers, there's, you know, another level of winners and losers. So the fact of the matter is that this is not only is it plain old corporate welfare, but it's also there's a lot of corruption at the bank. And the fact of the matter is American families and businesses deserve to have their tax dollars go spent more effectively than at this crony bank.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Do they have to abide by the same banking laws that regular domestic banks have to abide to?
What they do, they don't have to account for their risk the same way. There's some really concerning accounting practices at the Export-Import Bank. They don't have to use fair value analysis. And what the problem is there, like other banks do, and the problem with that is that the bank doesn't show the higher risk as effectively. So when you do a fair value analysis, like CBO recently did, it shows that the bank is losing money.
Interesting. We need to take a really quick break. When we come back, I'm kind of curious how many people work for the Export-Import Bank. I'm interested in actually the mechanics of it because we just don't hear about it unless there's a big fight like there has been recently. So, anyway, you are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online for more information about our guest, Christine Hansen. And you can find that at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Ain't gonna let those goons get justice. He makes his living off of the people's taxes. Part two, whoa, will she spend away? Billy Joe caught up to the very next day. They got the money, hey, you know they got away. They headed down south and they're still running.
That'd be Mexico. That's really south.
Down south. Who said the Ex-Im Bank didn't have a theme song?
That's right.
It's a lie. We found it here. You're listening to We the People Radio. We are being joined this afternoon by Christine Harbin Hansen. She's the Deputy Director of Federal Affairs for Americans for Prosperity. And we're getting a lesson in the Export-Import Bank because we don't know anything about it.
So
we had all sorts of questions on the break, but can you tell us how big an institution this is before we get too far down the road?
Oh, well, it's not large when you consider in the grand scheme of Washington spending or the number of XM employees. It actually is relatively small XM, small federal agency. However, one of the problems with it is that it really symbolizes a lot of the problems with government involvement in the banking and financing sector.
Sure.
So that's why we've been so focused on it.
And so, just to kind of boil it down, because I think I'm still a little bit confused. We loan money to companies overseas so that they can buy our domestic products. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. What countries do they deal with?
We see XM loans go across the world. We see them actually to countries like Canada and Western Europe, but we also see the XM loans go to companies based in Russia, in Southeast Asia. It's across the world. We've spent billions of dollars of taxpayer-backed loans throughout the world.
And do they loan money to companies overseas that are owned or partially owned by American entities?
We see these loans go to a variety of different companies. Some of them are actually going to state-owned businesses. So XM dollars are going to companies that are like state-owned.
By the government of Russia or owned by the government of India. Okay,
mm-hmm.
but not so much companies that have American partners. So there's no American companies that are benefiting on the loan side by doing business overseas.
One of the problems with the Export-Import Bank is that it has a number of requirements that it routinely fails to meet. And one of these, for example, is a requirement that a certain percentage of its loans go to small businesses. And you'll hear this talking point from XM supporters and beneficiaries that they imply that these are going to mom-and-pop businesses. A prime example recently was that they highlighted earlier was a pickle manufacturer, Miss Jenny. She would use the Export-Import Bank loans in order to export pickles. But the problem is when you look at where these XM dollars are going, around 80% of it is going to large politically connected companies, ones that could very easily get financing on the private market. And many of these companies do in fact get private financing on the private market. So the fact of the matter is that this is really just helping large politically connected companies. It's plain old corporate welfare, and that's really disputes a lot of the talking points from XM supporters.
Sharon, what's the, I don't know if it'd be technically called a default rate, but I mean, how many times do we not get paid back on these loans? And then what's the, you know, are they as bad at re-lending to those folks? Like, I mean, I'm picturing the housing, you know, the housing bubble. Like, here were people who couldn't afford the loans they were getting, but we loaned them to them anyway, and then we put on our shocked face when it didn't get paid. Is this the same sort of circle we see?
Well, it's certainly a continuing concern. One of the problems associated with it is that there's always a risk that taxpayers will have to pick up the tab.
Sure.
One of the interesting things that came out of a House hearing earlier on the issue, they had a small domestic airline manufacturer talking about how he actually had been approved for a loan on the private market, but he wasn't comfortable with putting up his house. He wasn't comfortable with, you know, putting up his own resources as collateral. And so that's why he sought a loan from the Export-Import Bank. But really this, you know, there's a lot of really concerning things when it comes to how this shifts a lot of the risk away from the companies and the innovators, and it's shifting it onto the American people who are still struggling in the down economy.
Yeah, no kidding. And so we were able to sidestep the reauthorization of it in June?
June is when the Export-Import Bank expired. So this is one of those opportunities where Congress can do the right thing by doing nothing.
Sure.
So AFP was very thrilled to see Congress let this bank expire. But unfortunately, what we're seeing right now are some efforts underway in Congress to extend the Export-Import Bank. And actually, the House recently voted in support of it. They passed a legislation. They actually forced it out of committee using a esoteric parliamentary tactic known as a discharge petition to force a floor vote on final passage. And they passed it last week with a vote of 313-118, which is very concerning.
Yeah, that many people were in favor of it. Now, is this, just out of curiosity, is this something that Democrats love to hate and the Republicans like, or what is there a party line sort of preference here?
There is a really interesting dynamics going on when you look at the breakdown by party. We see consistent support from House Democrats. So on the vote last week, there was all but one House Democrat voted for it. They 186
really?
Democrats. Yeah, and then. But when you look at Republicans, they're largely split. So looking at the votes there in the House this past time, there were 127 Republicans who voted yes, and then only 117 who voted no on the legislation. So as I mentioned earlier in the program, people at the grassroots level may not know very much about the bank, but the more that they learn about it, the more that they oppose it. We're seeing the same thing happen with House Republicans as well. The more that they learn about the bank, the more we see people come out and oppose it. And we saw pretty much every significant candidate running for president right now talking about coming out on the record. In both parties, we've seen Republicans running for president, also on the Democratic side as well, people coming out with a position on the issue. It's really interesting to see the dynamics there.
Interesting. Is it the limited government people versus the big government people, or people who have manufacturing in their district?
It's more of a district issue.
Okay.
Based on whether there are a high number of XM beneficiaries in their district.
Sure.
We see, and actually looking at the California delegation, the Republicans are pretty split. We did see only a small number. Most California lawmakers voted in support of the Export-Import Bank. In fact, in total, looking at both parties, 48 did. But there were five. There were five House Republicans from California who voted against it. They stood up and did the right thing.
And what type of manufacturing in California would benefit from this program?
I'm sure there's a great variety. I'm sure there's a lot of we see a lot of support for the Export-Import Bank in the airline industry, and I know that California is not that strong there, but California is a huge economy, and so of course there's going to be a high number of
sure.
beneficiaries.
Jerry Brown's doing his very best to make us not the sixth largest economy. Yeah, in no time at all, we'll be almost a non-player in the XM Bank. It won't matter at all.
I will say though, this is one of those issues where you have a lot of opposition to extending XM among leadership. Kevin McCarthy was joining. He had some great statements on the floor. He joined House Financial Services Committee Chairman Jeb Hensarling on the floor leading up to the vote and talked about how he was, his consistent opposition to the Export-Import Bank. We see a lot of support, we see people in leadership and also in the Republican Study Committee and also many members of the House Freedom Caucus who are on the far right of the House Republicans. We see a lot of people come out and oppose it.
Yeah, I know our congressman here in Northern California opposed it. I didn't have a chance to look at all the votes, so I wasn't really sure if it was a Democrat thing, a Republican thing. It sounds like it's a district thing, you know, and that makes a lot of sense. That's where the pressure would come in.
Yeah, the five House Republicans from California who voted the right way on the issue by opposing final passage were LaMalfa, McCarthy, McClintock, Rohrabacher, and Royce.
Interesting. And since we also air in the Philadelphia and New Jersey market, I don't know what you have at your fingertips, but maybe before the end of the program, since they'll hear this on Monday, maybe we could give a little overview on what their guys were mostly doing.
I actually have it right now in front of me.
Okay, well, far
we only
away.
We saw a similar dynamic happen in Pennsylvania as well. Only two people, only two House Republicans stood up and voted against it. Perry and Rothfuss voted nay, and the rest of the Pennsylvania delegation voted in support of it. So 16 Pennsylvania lawmakers, unfortunately, did not stand up for taxpayers and were swayed by special interests and extended the Export-Import Bank.
Interesting. What about New Jersey?
One second. Since I can pull that up.
Since we're scrolling through the list there, I guess I always feel like if we say something that makes everybody call them Monday and they didn't vote for it, we might as well just, you know, save everybody the hassle.
Well, it's really important to... you know, because it's not over yet. It's really important to call on Senate leaders to be firmer than the House in opposing this legislation, and also to remind members of Congress that even if the vote happened in the past and you disagreed with it, it's important to let them know that as well. So in New Jersey, Garrett and Lance voted against the legislation, but the rest of the New Jersey delegation supported the bank as well.
Interesting. We'll be right back. We've got more questions. The longer we talk, the more questions we're developing here. And you'll have to be sure and let us know if we're not hitting things that you wanted to cover, since you are the expert, and we obviously are not. We'll be back with Christine Harbin Hansen from Americans for Prosperity. We're talking about the XM Bank. We should call it the elusive XM Bank. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
I was just a child, my life was all so simple, and the ways of the great world seemed strange and funny. Then when I was a young man, I learned of that machine. Turns out all those bales of precious money.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's the new theme song of the Export-Import Bank. I know it's James Taylor, but what was that?
It's called Money Machine.
Wow, that's bizarre.
One of his tracks off of In the Pocket from the mid-70s.
Well, who knew? How did I get through the mid-70s without hearing that song? What a kick. All right, you're rejoining We the People Radio. Okay, Christine, I've got a question for you. I looked up the, let's see, what is this actually? This is the XM Bank's website, What We Do. I couldn't get past the first, no, it's like this, actually the third sentence. It says, the bank is an independent federal agency, which is kind of a misnomer right away, that fills gaps in private export finance in order to bolster U.S. job growth at no cost to American taxpayers.
Yeah, what's
that? I'm like,
again.
Okay, which part of that was actually correct?
That's like free money.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So how are they allowed to say this? Is it just like every other government thing? They can just say whatever they want, and if you don't actually look beyond it, you don't know?
Well, they're using, as we mentioned before, the bank has a different set of accounting practices and accounting practices that allow it to hide the fact that it's losing taxpayer dollars. So when you do use fair value accounting, when you accurately account for the risk, you see that the Ex-Im Bank is actually costing American taxpayers $2 billion over the next decade. And one other point I would add is that the bank's outstanding liabilities that the U.S. taxpayers are ultimately on the hook for, have risen from about $51 billion in 2007 to $134 billion in 2014. Wow. So it's a significant rise.
It is. And see, on their own website, it says that they have a $675 million surplus generated for American taxpayers in fiscal year 2014. So, they're literally promoting themselves as a money-making.
Moneymaker.
Yeah. They support 164,000 jobs, supposedly, and nearly 90% of the Ex-Im Bank transactions directly supported small businesses.
Well, one of the problems with these job numbers is that Ex-Im supporters routinely overstate them. So we hear from various groups that Ex-Im supports, for example, 46,000 jobs in Florida or 180,000 jobs in California. But this would account for about 87% of total jobs Ex-Im claims to have, mm-hmm. while Florida and California only receive 14% of Ex-Im authorizations. So,
yeah, that doesn't quite add up.
No,
yeah, it definitely doesn't add up at all.
We hear a lot of really confusing numbers coming from the Ex-Im Bank, but when you look at them in total and you compare them, it's very convenient. It's a lot of fuzzy math.
Exactly. Well, I'm kind of curious about the initial statement that they're an independent federal agency. Independent of what?
Well, that's really a very good point to highlight. Even though the American tax dollars are going to support these loans, there's very little oversight, very little transparency at the bank. And actually, since Americans for Prosperity and our coalition partners have really started highlighting the problems at the bank has become less transparent. They used to have more information about the loans and where they were going on their website, but about a year into our project, Ex-Im took off a lot of this data. So taxpayers deserve to have, more accountability for their money, because this is real money. This is, other things that they would spend, save, or invest in the private sector. If they didn't have to go and prop up crony agencies like the Export Import Bank.
Well, if they're using taxpayer money, isn't that public record where they're actually sending it and using it and how much they're making and spending and so forth?
And their type of accounting, is there no requirement that they not use a sleight of hand method of accounting?
Well, the fact of the matter is that there is very little transparency at the bank. So taxpayers do not have a clear idea of where this money is going. And that's why it's really important to call on Congress and encourage them to let it expire, but also demand some accountability at the bank. Because what we've seen is a lot of problems, a long history of corruption. We've seen over the past few years several senior-level bank employees been implicated in accepting cash payments or kickbacks and bribes, while other bank staffers have also faced criticism for accepting lavish tips and other gifts So it's so important to, you know, really highlight all the wasteful spending that's at this bank. Just like there's a lot of wasteful spending elsewhere in government, but particularly here.
And they are part, who oversees them? I mean, besides, you know, I mean, Congress and all that. But, I mean, where, what are they part of? Are they truly like their own entity out there?
Yes, it's different than some of the other federal agencies that we often hear about, like the Environmental Protection Agency or the Department of Energy. But the Export-Import Bank does have its own inspector general that looks for problems. But separate than that, there's very little oversight for the Export-Import Bank.
Interesting.
Thankfully, we did see a lot of the bank come under scrutiny over the past year in Congress. We saw a series of hearings at House Oversight that really highlighted a lot of the problems at the Export-Import Bank. So we really applaud Oversight Committee Chaffetz for his work in exposing a lot of the problems at the Export-Import Bank, because if that House doesn't do it, then a lot of these problems just wouldn't ever see light.
Now, when they didn't reauthorize it in June, does it just lurk out there? It can always come back? Is that the deal?
Well, what the Export-Import Bank does now, after June, after Congress didn't reauthorize it, or when Congress let it expire, is the bank didn't close up shop right away. It continues to service the loans it currently has.
Sure.
But it's not extending new loans, and that's a really important thing. So it's been expired for the past few months, and it hasn't issued any new credit. But that's why it's so concerning to see these efforts underway in Congress to extend the Export-Import Bank, because if the House and Senate agree to an reauthorization and the President signs it, then it can start to issue more loans, and then we'll see the outstanding liabilities grow, ones that U.S. taxpayers will ultimately be on the hook for.
Well, if it hasn't been reauthorized and they're not issuing new loans, shouldn't that immediately have an effect on the size of their operation? I mean, I would think that their whole loan department would go away if they're just managing what's out there now. Have we seen any of that?
Well, we have seen the Export-Import Bank signal that it will scale down, but this is we haven't really seen anything very significant to that effect. I mean, certainly the Export-Import Bank will go away, but our focus has been the size of the outstanding liabilities. So yes, it is concerning to have, you know, people who are employed, who are on the government payroll, who are servicing these loans, but the real problem here is the amount that taxpayers are on the hook for.
If they closed right now and what was out there got paid back, how upside down are they? Like,
how upside down would the Export-Import Bank be?
Yeah. How much would we be on the hook for if it just never reauthorized from here forward?
Oh, well, currently, as of 2014, the outstanding liability was $134 billion. So if...
Well, that's a sizable amount of money, $134 billion.
Yeah, we waste that in record time. However, it'd be nice not to just watch it blow away.
Yeah, and there's a lot of... it's bad in practice, and it's also bad in principle. Like, not only is it a problem to have the government intervene in the market to this extent, it's also bad in principle in the way that it's picking winners and losers. One of the things that we hear very frequently from members of Congress who support this is they say things that they want to help businesses in their district. You know, that's what the most common talking point that we hear from XM supporters and beneficiaries. But what we've been pointing out is if you want to help American businesses export more, there are much better ways to do it than extending the Export-Import Bank. And a prime way would be through comprehensive tax reform. You know, currently the United States has a corporate income tax system that's very hostile to domestic investment. It's very hostile to job creation. if members of Congress truly wanted to help businesses export, if they really wanted to, you know, get, you know, help businesses here at home, a much better way to do that would be to lower the rate, the corporate income tax rate, and switch how we assess the corporate income tax, because that would be a way to help businesses without picking and choosing between them.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. We're going to take one last break. We're going to come back, finish up the top of the hour. Christine, you might look through your list of your list of things that we've unfortunately made you ramble through, and we'll give you till the top of the hour to smarten us up, especially for those folks who live in a district where their congressional representative, House or Senate, supports the Ex-Im Bank. You're listening to We the People. Find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Songs about money. We've been listening to them for years and had no idea. You're joining We the People Radio. We are finishing up our first hour here with Christine Harbin Hansen. She's the Deputy Director of Federal Affairs for the Americans for Prosperity. All right, Christine, what didn't we ask? Did we leave out anything good? Uh-oh. Did we lose her?
I'm still here.
Oh, there you are. Did we leave out anything good that people need to know?
No, I think we hit all the main points.
Nice. Okay, so then tell us a little bit about Americans for Prosperity for those folks that don't know anything about it, or it's the group that they love to hate. It's always fun to chat to those people, too.
Definitely. Well, Americans for Prosperity is the country's largest conservative or grassroots organization. We have members in, we have nearly 3 million Americans for Prosperity activists in 37 state chapters. And we promote policies of economic freedom at the state and federal level.
Nice. So you could be involved with almost anything.
Well, it's easier to talk about the issues that we don't work on than the ones that we do work on.
Oh,
but
okay.
Our priority issues right now are budget and spending, taxes, energy policy, and also healthcare policy. We have been one of the longest opponents to the president's healthcare law. We spend a lot of work opposing Medicaid expansion at the state level, exchange creation, and endorsing meaningful efforts to promote free market healthcare policy at the federal level.
That makes sense. So if people wanted to get involved or learn more about your group, what's the best way to do that?
To learn more about Americans for Prosperity and the issues that we work on, folks can go to our website, americansforprosperity.org, or they can get connected with their state chapter.
Interesting.
We have a chapter in California, led by Dave Spady. And also, you mentioned earlier that you're in Pennsylvania as well.
Correct.
Beth Ann Mumford is our state director in Pennsylvania. So I encourage folks, your listeners, to get in touch with Dave and Beth Ann in if they want to get more involved with our organization.
Nice. Americans, it's all spelled out, AmericansForProsperity.org.
Correct.
Nice. And then at the state level, what do people do? You know, I mean, what's your, I guess, as far as activity? Like, if you're just a regular person and you don't have tons of time, you don't have, you know, a whole bunch of money to donate, but you do have an interest, what kinds of things can they do?
Definitely. Well, there's a lot of different ways to get involved in Americans for Prosperity, especially at the state level. One of the things that one of our primary activities is knocking on doors and calling up people on phones and talking to them about important issues and encouraging them to connect with their elected officials at the state level and in promoting good policies. I was actually in Ohio yesterday, for example, attending a energy event. I attended a rally where we were highlighting the harmful impact of the president's so-called clean power plan, his carbon rule, mm-hmm. and the impact that it'll have in Ohio. So in addition to phones and doors, you can also attend rallies. You can also take action online, send notes to your members of Congress and encourage them to do the right thing when they're taking votes. So there's a great variety of ways where people can partner with Americans for Prosperity in promoting free market policy solutions.
Nice. Well, we really appreciate all that because unlike, I don't know, that you'll hear on the mainstream media, the world does not revolve around conservative philosophy, huh?
Well, we aren't seeing a lot of good conservative policies reach the president's desk here on Capitol Hill. So it's certainly easy to get discouraged at the federal level. But on the state level, we're seeing a lot of good conservative successes. We've seen recently a number of states pass right-to-work policies, pass other important labor reforms that will promote worker freedom. We're seeing some states pursue tax reform, like in North Carolina. I know that the state legislature there is certainly standing up for taxpayers and promoting a better tax environment that will put the state in a much better economic shape. So at the state level, we're seeing a lot of successes. There's still a lot of threats, but we're trying to work very closely with folks at the grassroots level and call on state leaders to work on these issues.
And that's so where it's all going to start.
As far as election politics, are you guys getting behind any one person, or are you just waiting to see who comes out?
Well, Americans for Prosperity doesn't endorse candidates, so right. we don't weigh in on
okay, so that's good to know.
On that. So. However, we are closely watching the issue and looking to see, and we're thrilled to see opportunities where issues related to economic freedom are reaching the national narrative.
Well, send us some of your coworkers on other topics. We'd love to hear from you guys.
Thanks for coming on with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks a million. Enjoy your free hour today. Thanks, Christine. You've been joining We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be back with Lauren Price from Veteran Warriors next hour.